Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. I smell blood in the air. These young bloods is dying. A lot of moms are crying. Too much murder but not enough man on Zion. Blood affects the waters like a jungle. You can't even provide for your daughter, so you hit the corner. Between the rock and the hard place, sell rocks in the hallway. Cause a rich dude the next day, you're tired of struggle. But I wish your father loved you, and I wish your mother hugged you, so you won't go kill your brother. But it's time for change. Not enough love, I'm tired of playing games. Believe the Bible, if you don't, go live a life of shame. You ain't even know, royal blood flowing through your veins. Cause you a king and you a priest to the highest of reign. Consider this and remember this, the Torah is Genesis, Exodus and Leviticus. No more dichotomy, read numbers, Deuteronomy. Cause that's what I love at, throw my hands up and I'm out of here. Truth, music.
Gunfire, another Hebrew down. Jacob's troubles approaching and it's hard to smile. They killing us without a care in the world. Then hold themselves innocent, I guess they following the word. Plus this pain runs deep. Watch your fam lose faith, make it hard to sleep. Earthquakes, brothers drowning in water. And that FEMA truck seem to get closer and closer. But still, we turn on one another. When Yah gave the order, love one another. Your brothers keep or protect your own people, but we only worry about being the white man's equal. This is the sequel for already took place. Egypt, America, different time but same race. Keep pace, keep your eyes on Yah. Choose like keep the commandments or get ready to die.
Something much more than them chemtrails. I feel a spirit of the details scribed in the scrolls of Revelation. Four horsemen racing, secret plots manifest from United Nations. I smell the smoke of Satan's lies in the air. Stay aware, cause that angry lion keep a cold stare. Accuse you day and night right before the throne. Mad as hell, it's time short. He ain't trying to die alone or off in zone. Sit back and watch the hourglass as sands of time tune the past. Once the market's burning crash, a digital angel replaces paper cash. You take the beast's mark, you won't escape Yahweh's wrath. That's coming in the form of the marvelous one, whose words bloodies the moon and darkens up the flaming sun. For a tongue of sharp sword swings from his mouth, soon to kill all sinners, east, west, north, south. I feel it.
Yeah, the scripture says, to the law and to the testimony. If they speak not according to this word, it ain't no light in them. Shalom.
Keep your eyes open, man. You never know when the end coming, cause it's getting there.
Yeah. The end is here, man. Pay attention quick. The prince of the air is coming for your soul. Make sure you got control. Keep your Yahweh's laws. Shalom. Qom Yasha'Allah.
The least of us on strike like King David. We be Yahweh's favorite. That raw view was the fake beast. We marinated. Grab the swords and shields, then rush the battlefield. Then run and snatch each of our wicked heels. Back into the pits of brimstones and blue fire. Bow his neck to the name of the Most High.
Is it done? Shalom, shalom, shalom. Good morning. Barbaqua Tawab, which is Paleo Hebrew for good morning, y'all. Shalom, Yasha Allah, Shalom, Yasha Allah. Good morning, 12 tribes worldwide, y'all. I'm your host, your brother, your friend, man, Pa, and welcome to another episode of Sword of Truth. Sword of Truth presents Bible Talk. Hope everybody had a good weekend, a healthy weekend, a boring weekend, like I always say. Boring is not always a bad thing. Boring is a good thing, man. It's simple, you know. No drama keeps you out of trouble, man. A lot of stuff going on this weekend, man. A lot of stuff in the news, which I'm going to cover, I want to get to. But welcome to the show, man. Once again, tell a friend to please tune in. Talk of Pride Tuesday, happening every Tuesday. So I want to start the show, man, like I always do. Let's get Psalms chapter 118, verse 24. Here we go. Psalms 118, verse 24. This is the day which the Lord had made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Yes, we will, y'all. Good or bad, happy or sad, man. Whatever it is you're going through, give all praise to the Most High, Yahweh Shai. So I want to send shouts out to my brothers here in San Antonio, ISBHPK San Antonio. The brothers have a moving company, On The Mark Moving, man. You need anything moved, any appliances moved, hit those brothers up, onthemarkmoving.com. Also want to send shouts out to brothers down in H-Town. And their business is Sweet Ambience. And yes, the brothers in H-Town are our brother school, ISBHPK Houston. But Sweet Ambience, check them out. They're online. Sweet fragrances, customize your own fragrance, personalize your scent. They got some stuff for the house too, for the car, for the body, whatever you need. If you like smell good, get at those brothers. Also, the brothers here in San Antonio still have one mall open and operating at Rolling Oaks. The name of their business is Eastern Fragrances. So check those brothers out too. Customize your fragrances, home, house, body, car, smell goods. Send shouts out to the brothers in VA also. They're under the umbrella of ISBHPK. Their business is also the Sweet Ambience. And I believe, I don't know if they got it started there yet with the moving, but it's on the way. Also sending shouts out to the brothers, the new brothers out in Rochester, New York, man. The brother, Darnell out there holding them down. Seen them on YouTube this weekend, street teaching, man. Brother putting it down out there. Also want to send shouts out to my Albuquerque brothers. Brother Mashaba, brother Badabad, brother Imad out there doing big things, working with those young men, developing their minds and their spirits, getting their spirits together. It's a beautiful thing. Let me get into it, y'all. I had an opportunity to watch, I don't know if y'all seen it yet, but it's on the History Channel, the story about Greenwood, Oklahoma, which is also known as Black Wall Street. A lot of information I didn't know, man, and a lot of stuff that I did and was just really edifying to hear some of the stuff that I already knew, specifically about the tribes, what we refer to as Reuben, that's their biblical name, the Reubenites, getting together with the tribe of Judah, man, and even some of those Gadites. They mention the Trail of Tears and the migration and how that we have been living together. And one of the phrases they called me, one of the brothers said that blacks and Native Americans have been living, what do you say, living, marrying, and dying together for centuries, man. I mean, which basically just proves what all the history books say, you know, even about the, I think they were called Maroons that we had in living together. And the Maroons were basically swamplands where so-called blacks trying to escape slavery would run, and they would hide in these communities that were already established by so-called Native Americans. And we would live there, man, and they would accept us because they knew that we were the same people. I mean, even today, and Kawakawa has brought this out on numerous occasions, a lot of us so-called blacks running around here thinking that, okay, we black, you know, from the motherland, whoop-de-woo. A lot of us are actually what they refer to as Indians or Native Americans, man. I mean, myself, I just found out, what, maybe 5 years ago that my family is of Native American descent. We know them as the tribe of Reuben, man. My great-grandfather was full-blooded Cherokee, which was one of those five, what they call the five civilized tribes that migrated in the Trail of Tears. Those tribes being the Cherokees, the Seminoles, the Chickasaws, and I think the Creek, all migrated from Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, and I believe, yeah, Mississippi, all migrated, leaving there, going to this big dust bowl in Oklahoma. But the documentary touched on that and brought out some real interesting points. But then, you know, like we always do, our people in such hopelessness always are on the quest for reparations, man. And I don't think our people really fully understand what reparations mean. So I had the definition here, had to look it up. All right. So the definition for reparations, y'all, I don't know if y'all knew this, but reparations means to repair or keeping in repair. So when we say that we want reparations, what we're saying is we want to be repaired. But a lot of us think it's just about money and it's just about land. But keep in mind, because the Bible even says this, I'm going to get it real quick. And for those just tuning in, what I like to do, if it's your first time tuning in, I spend about an hour going over the news, current events, and just basically speaking my mind. And then I get into the show. So let me get this, dealing with reparations. What is it, 50? Yeah, I think it's Isaiah 52. Let me find it real quick, y'all. So let me just a second, y'all, bear with me. It's It's Isaiah 52 and verse 3, Isaiah chapter 52 and verse 3, and it reads, "For thus said the Lord, ye have sold yourselves for naught," meaning the word "not" means nothing. So Most High said, "You sold yourselves for nothing. Ye shall be redeemed or saved without money. So we get caught up in this whole reparations thing, money, land. Well, the Most High said that we're going to be redeemed or saved without money, y'all. And then we got to really look at it from a spiritual perspective. If we're saying and thinking that reparations from our captors is the end all be all, then what we're essentially saying is we don't need Yahweh Shah to come save us. What we're saying is we want to stay here in captivity. Remember, y'all, we were brought here for a punishment by the Heavenly Father. And him being our Heavenly Father, you know, it's no different than a kid. And for us that can remember when parenting, when parents were still parenting, when your parents would put you on the punishment, could your neighbor take you off that punishment? Could the woman down the street who didn't birth you, who wasn't clothing and feeding you, could she take you off of that punishment? No, she couldn't. Could somebody across town take you off the punishment? No, they couldn't. Who were the only people that could take you off the punishment? The people that put you on the punishment, which would be your parents. So we know that the Most High, our Heavenly Father, put us here for our punishment and had us go through all the things that we went through for our punishment. So who's the only one that can take the punishment away? It is, in fact, the Most High, our Heavenly Father. You know, and a lot of people, they can't stomach, or we can't stomach the idea that the Most High caused all these things to happen to us for our disobedience. You know, our people have a real hard psychological time dealing with that. And I know this because, you know, from experience, man. When we would go out street teaching here in San Antonio, we would catch heat all the time when we would bring up, you know, people like Martin Luther King. We would talk about integration and how it was a curse and it did no justice for our people. Hell, when we went down to Louisiana for Austin Sterling, man, it was about to be a riot because we was talking about MLK and how he was not beneficial for our people, and he wasn't. But our people really find this hard to accept. Let me get Deuteronomy chapter 28, and I'm going to read verse, I think it's verse 63. Yep. Deuteronomy 28. Now, listen to this, y'all, because I'm not just bumping off at the mouth. I'm going to prove everything I'm saying. Deuteronomy 28, verse 63, it says, "And it shall come to pass that as the Lord rejoiced over you to do you good." And there was a time the Most High rejoiced over us to do us good when we would follow his law, statutes, and commandments. It says, "And to multiply you, so the Lord will rejoice over you to destroy you and to bring you to naught. And ye shall be plucked from off the land whither thou goest to possess it." And that's any land that we was granted or touched or in ownership of. The Most High said any land we were going to be plucked off of it. So you look at situations like Greenwood, Oklahoma, what they call the Black Wall Street. Why were we plucked off our land? It was prophesied that was going to happen. Because I looked at that documentary, and, man, we had it going on. We had lawyers, doctors, teachers. You know, we had the social elites. This one sister they were interviewing was talking about how her mom had black teachers. They had black doctors, black dentists. There was commerce going on. The brother said that a dollar would circulate, I think he said like five times. What did he say? Oh, I'm sorry. Like 20, I misquoted 20 times before it left the community. So we had all those things that were working for us, but you know the absence that we had, we didn't have the Most High, y'all. Think about it, you know. And then there's the push now, man, for black economics, black wealth, generational wealth. Our people are striving for and trying to obtain. But we're missing the point because we've had those things before. Come on, man. If we don't learn from our past history, then we're bound to repeat our mistakes. Hell, that's why we're still here in captivity, because we keep doing the same thing over and over and expect a different outcome. which is the definition for insanity, by the way. We keep doing the exact same thing, hoping for a different outcome. We've had wealth before. We've had economics. How long have we been politically involved? For centuries, and nothing has changed. Hell, we had a so-called supposed black president in the White House, and nothing changed. Everything still stayed the same. Hell, you got a so-called black woman in the White House right now. I'm not looking for Esau's handout and reparations, because you know it's not going to be just anyway, y'all. You know it's going to be some backhanded stuff. I'm going to show y'all what we should be praying for. You know the Our Father prayer that we pray ignorantly on some of our behalfs? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We don't really understand what we're praying for. Let me show y'all what we're praying for, though. Let me go to Revelation chapter 21. This is what I'm waiting on. I ain't waiting for no damn handouts here. Because they can't repair us. If they did give us some money, all we're going to do is give it back to them anyway, because whose face is on the damn money? They face. They own everything. Wouldn't it be better to be in your own land with your face on the money? Come on, y'all. We're really not thinking. They do unrighteous dealings anyway. So this is what we should be praying for. This is Revelation chapter 21 and verse 1. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. This is what we waiting on. It says, and I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. And what men, you ask? The same men that he's always been dealing with, the Israelites. It's consistent all throughout the Bible, from the Old Testament to the New Testament. Some people might read this and say, it applies to all men, but let me show you how it does it. Still in verse 3, same precept. And he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. You see that? His is a singular possessive pronoun. Who's always historically been God's people? The Israelites. Old Testament, New Testament. No difference. And they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. Now listen to this, verse 4. And God shall wipe away And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. What does that mean, y'all? It means, like, let me just read it. And there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. So us robbing Peter to pay Paul, us begging for damn crumbs from the master table, we ain't got to do none of that. Us waiting on damn stimulus checks and kickback checks for kids or whatever they proposing now supposed to be coming out. All of that, man, we have to having to wait on that and place our livelihood on those things anymore. It says the Most High is going to be with us. Can you imagine no more pain and no more sorrow? And I know I've brought this out before, but this is one of my favorite precepts right here, man. This is the good news, y'all. It's supposed to make you feel good. It's supposed to make you tear up. It's supposed to make your spine tingle, put butterflies in your stomach. This is the true and real reparations, y'all. Not us waiting for some damn handouts from our enemies. All right, let me get into the news. Let me play all this. Put it on speaker so everybody can hear it. Matter of fact, before I even get to that, I came across this. Now, I've been hearing about this a lot in the news here lately. I don't know if y'all have. But this is from NSACSS. This is a website, and it reads the headlines. It says UFO documents
Index. The documents listed on this page were located in response to numerous requests received by NSA on the subject of unidentified flying objects, UFOs. In 1980, NSA was involved in civil action number 80-1562, Citizens Against Unidentified Flying Objects, Secretary V. National Security Agency, documents related to the litigation are marked with XXXXX has been inserted, and a title and a portion of the title has been deleted prior to release. To select documents, right? So I selected one of these documents just to see what it was. Now, trip off of this, y'all. And the title of this document is The U.S. Government and Iran Case. And they got a whole bunch of them, y'all. Y'all can go on the website and check it out for yourself. It's real interesting. Now, listen to this. It says, International Incident of Interest. Information on that Iran case straight from the top brass. In IUR volume number one, a case in the foreign forum feature described an encounter between Iranian Air Force jets and a UFO, which played cat and mouse with them, appearing on radar and paralyzing their weapons and electronical systems. When the jets attempted to open fire on it, in the interim, rumors began to circulate that a government document detailing the incident was being examined by high government officials. UFO researcher Charles Huffer took an interest in securing a copy of this document while in Germany, but all his efforts met with official rebuffs. This past summer, on a trip to the United States, Mr. Huffer managed to obtain a copy of the original teletype message reproduced below, which gives detail of the case from the Pentagon under the assumption of the Freedom of Information Act. What is particularly interesting about the document is the list of official agencies which received copies of the message. Briefly translating the official acronyms, the document was received by the following offices and agencies: the Secretary of State and the Central Intelligence Agency, the White House, the Air Force, and the Army Chiefs of Staff, the Chief of Naval Operations, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Commander-in-Chief of U.S. Naval Forces in the Middle East, the Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Air Force in Europe, the European Defense Air Command, and the Commander-in-Chief of Forces in Europe. An impressive list. So all of these people know that you so-called unidentified flying objects, they know that they exist. Ain't that some? But the Bible been talking about that. Us as Israelites, we've been talking about this for years. And people say, what, man, y'all niggas is crazy. Ain't no damn flying objects. Yes, it is, y'all. I just gave you proof. Go to this website and check it out for yourself, y'all. Now, I want to read y'all this out of the Bible, Zechariah chapter 5. I'm going to start at verse 1. This is Zechariah chapter 5, verse 1. It says, then I turned and lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a flying robe. And he said unto me, what seest thou? And I answered, I see a flying roll. What's a flying roll, y'all? Imagine a roll like a pastry. Imagine it just flying, going in circles. What does that look like? What is he describing? But what they also refer to as a flying saucer, man. He called it a flying roll. He says, the length thereof is 20 cubits, and the breadth thereof 10 cubits. Then said he unto me, this is the curse what is it? Here's a curse that goeth forth over the face of the whole earth. And this is why so many intelligence communities have records of these so-called unidentified objects, because this curse goes forth over the whole globe. William Cooper, he wrote a book back in the day, Behold a Pale Horse. That was the title of the book. He was in the Navy. And in his book, he has several chapters about the unidentified flying objects that he's seen for himself. So it's countless information out about these UFOs. They do exist, y'all. But we find out even in the Bible's telling us about them. But the Bible says that they were a curse that was going forth over the face of the whole earth. And once again, I'm in Zephaniah chapter 5, verse 3. For everyone, now listen to this. Why does it say it's a curse? It says, for everyone that steal it shall be cut off. So it's a curse for everybody that steals. Who's known for stealing things? Who's known for stealing whole damn countries? All right. It says, for everyone that steal it shall be cut off on this side according to it. And everyone that swear it shall be cut off as on that side according to it. Which is everybody that swears. So swear is, matter of fact, let me just read on verse 4. I will bring it forth, said the Lord of hosts, and it shall enter into the house of the thief. So these UFOs enters into whose house and abduct them? And we know this through history. Who's always talking about they've been abducted by a UFO? Y'all remember that movie, Invaders, Close Encounters or something? Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Close Encounters. They made several movies about the so-called white man being abducted by these UFOs, man. There's truth to it. You remember the movie Independence Day? That's what the dude was talking about. Yeah, man, they took me up, these aliens. And what's crazy about it, they're always making these movies about these aliens coming down from outer space and abducting people. But what they're not telling people and what people don't understand is the supposed aliens in these movies are actually the angels, y'all. That's what they ain't telling y'all. These are God's, part of God's army, the Most High's army, his host. Remember, he's referred to as the Lord of hosts. The word host, look it up. It means armies. The Most High has an army. His angels. I guess I'm going to have to do, yeah, I'm definitely going to have to do a UFO class to show everybody, to prove what I'm saying. So I'm going to read verse 4 again. It says, I will bring it forth, said the Lord of hosts, and it shall enter into the house of the thief. Right? Now, like I brought out in verse 3, who's known globally as the thief? Who's always colonializing places? Who's always stealing natural resources? Who's always stealing culture? They call it what? Cultural appropriation. They want to be the last samurai, Tom Cruise, right? How are you the damn last samurai and you a white man? And we know that the samurais are the Japanese. What about the last of the Mohicans? Had a white boy play that, bro. The Mohicans was the Indian tribe. What the hell are you talking about? You the last of the Mohicans. Stop. And then they always want to say what, man? We hear this constantly from Caucasian folks. Oh, yeah, I'm one-third Cherokee. I'm two-fourths Native American. They always got these fractions that they want to say that they're part this or part that. That's cultural appropriation. They ain't no damn Native Americans. They $5 Indians. Look that up. $5 Indians and Roy Rogers' kids. He was having a lot of intercourse with our people, the Native Americans, and he was making kids. But you are what your father is. He's a white man, so I don't care if you did mingle his seed with a Native American. You still white. You still a Caucasian. Y'all said I was going to stop calling them white. talking about they name, they common name, Caucasian, because this is really what they are, quite cave dwellers. But anyway, let me read verse 4 again, Zechariah chapter 5, verse 4. I will bring it forth, said the Lord of hosts, and it shall enter to the house of the thief and into the house of him that sweareth falsely by my name. It told you that in the precept before verse 3. It says those that swear it, right? And now verse 4 says those that swear falsely by my name. Who are the only people that, what is this? Okay. Who are the only people, man, that take you to court, make you put your hand on the Bible, swear by the Most High's name, and then they put the Bible up and pull out their own constitutional law? Who are the only people that do this? It's definitely the Caucasian people, the so-called white man, the Edomites. It says, him that swear falsely by my name, it says, and it shall remain in the midst of his house and shall consume it with the timber thereof and the stones thereof. But the Most High is saying that this is going to be a curse to the so-called white man. This is going to prick him consistently forever. Sorry, let me make sure his mic is on. Okay, cool. So this is something that's going to curse him forever, y'all. But here we have it, UFOs in the Bible. Y'all check that website out. Let me give y'all the information to it once again. It's UFO Documents Index /CSA. I mean, NSA /CSS, UFO Documents Index. Check it out, y'all. They've been talking about it a lot because they've got unofficial people, retired people coming out talking about it. All right, now I want to get to this right here, where we at. Get that out. Get that out. Go here. Check this out, y'all.
Due tonight, do not come. Vice President Kamala Harris delivering that message in Guatemala to potential migrants to the United States in that country saying, don't come. This is as there's a huge surge in illegal border crossings under President Biden.
I want to be clear to folks in this region who are thinking about making that dangerous trek to the United States-Mexico border. Do not come. Do not come. The United States will continue to enforce our laws and secure our border. And I believe if you come to our border, you will be turned back.
You will be turned back. Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez taking on Harris, tweeting, quote, this is disappointing to see. First, seeking asylum at any U.S. border is a 100% legal method of arrival. Second, the U.S. spent decades contributing to regime change and destabilization in Latin America. We can't help set someone's house on fire and then blame them for fleeing. Matt Rivers is out front in Mexico City for us tonight. And Matt, I mean, I have to say, this is really, really strong from Vice President Harris. She's in Guatemala. If you come, I believe you will be turned away. Do not come. What more did Harris say?
You know, the Vice President's office, Aaron, is calling this a fact-finding mission about the root causes of migration, which is really just a fancy way of saying that they're trying to figure out how to get less migrants arriving at the U.S. Southern border. And clearly part of their short-term strategy is that tough talk that you heard from the Vice President there. But the only way to really substantively solve this problem is by addressing things like chronic poverty, chronic violence, chronic corruption, the kind of things that are actually sending people north. And I can tell you that the situation with all three of those things in Central America right now is very bad. We just got back from a reporting trip to a poor part of Honduras. We spent 5 or 6 days there last week, and I spoke to several dozen people who lived in this neighborhood. Every single person told me they at least considered traveling to the United States, or they will consider traveling, and huge sections of these neighborhoods were actually empty because so many people had left. But strikingly, Aaron, what we heard from these people is that they don't want to actually migrate. They look at this as a matter of survival. If they don't migrate, they cannot feed their families. And so when you're talking about stakes at that kind of a level, I'm not sure how much the words Vice President Harris are actually going to deter anyone from going to the United States, just like they didn't really deter people back in 2019 when Donald Trump was president, an anti-immigrant president, including with his rhetoric. And yet the last time we saw a big spike in migrants at the border was during 2019. I bring that up only to put down the point that when it comes to the number of people arriving to the border, it matters a lot more about what the conditions are like on the ground in the countries that people are migrating from than the messaging that's coming out of the White House.
Y'all hear that? It ain't that something too, man. They get, I don't even know if I can call her a nigga. Is she a nigga? Is her father a Judite? I know one of her parents is an Elamite, East Indian. I'm not sure, but what struck me is, I don't need to say strange, man. It was kind of predictable how Biden is dealing with all this other stuff, but then he send the nigga to do the dirty work, the work that he didn't want to do. This country has had a so-called immigration issue since Trump was in office 4 years back. He sent her down there to do his dirty work. And then it's crazy, man, what the sister said. She was on point, man. She was on point. She said it's unfair to burn somebody's house down and then get mad at them for, wait a minute, what? Let me get that comment again. She was on point with that, though. Because the U.S., man, they've been involved in so many coups and overthrowing so many governments, replacing them with their puppet presidents, man. And matter of fact, this is everybody's homework assignment. I want y'all to check out a movie called The Good Shepherd. It's got, who was the Born Identity dude? Matt Damon. Matt Damon's in it. De Niro's in it. It's got a great cast. But the movie goes into how the CIA was established. It goes into the espionage of America, the coups they've orchestrated. Talks about the Bay of Pigs, the Cold War. Also dabbles a little bit into the Skull and Bones secret societies, man. But it's a good movie, man. But it points out just what that sister was saying, man. And this is what America has a tendency of doing. But the good news is they're definitely going to pay for it. The Bible says so. Check this out, y'all. This is Colossians chapter 3, verse 25. It says, "But he that doeth wrong shall receive for the wrong which he hath done. And there is no respect of person." What this means is, man, if you do something wrong, it don't matter who you are. If you do something wrong, then guess what you got coming back to you? That same wrong that you did, if not worse. And the Most High said he don't respect people. So look at all the wrong that America has done globally. They're not getting off the hook. I mean, they might think that they're getting off the hook, but the Most High is definitely bringing their wrongdoings back to their front door, man. I'm going to read Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7, which basically said the same thing. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7. "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Who are the only people that put in God we trust on their money? America." That's why it says, "Be not deceived. God is not mocked." That's a mockery of the Most High. Y'all don't trust in the Most High. If y'all did, then this country would be governed by the law, statutes, and commandments of the Most High. But it ain't. It's governed by your constitution. It says, let me read it, Galatians 6, 7. "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sow, that shall he also reap." Whatever you plant is coming back directly to you. No ifs, ands, buts about it, man. You're definitely going to get it. You dish it out, it's coming back. Anyway, I'm transitioning over now to my class entitled Religion, Is It For You? A Look Into Judaism. And this is part three of this, y'all. But the whole Religion, Is It For You? It's been a series that I've been doing, and I'm sorry, I lost track of how many episodes I've done. But let's get into it, y'all. I know the last class we were in Revelations, and I was breaking Revelations down verses 1, 2, and 3. And if you haven't heard it, please go back and listen just to catch you up on what was going on. But I'm going to do, let me see. I don't know where I want to start at. So let's do a little small recap. Okay, and I'll just give y'all the scriptures. So Revelation chapter 20 and verse 1, and it says, "And I saw another angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand." Now, what we went over was the angel that is talking about here in Revelation is actually talking about Yahweh Shai, or who the world calls Jesus Christ. And the scriptures we went to prove that was Revelation chapter 1 and verse 18. And then where did we go? Let me see. Look back up. Yeah, Revelation chapter 1, verse 18. Then we went to Matthew chapter 16, verses 18 through 19. Then we went to Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16. All right? So Christ has all the keys to all realms, even in the realm of men. And what he did was he gave this authority, because that's what it means to really have keys. Like, you got keys to your house, which means what? You have the authority to go into your house because it's your house. You own it, right? So you should have keys. Like, you got keys to your car, which gives you authority to drive your car because you paid for it. You got the keys to it, right? Well, Christ has the authority over all realms, spiritual realm, the earthly realm, the realm of men, so on and so forth. He can give it to whoever he wants to give it to. Now, I didn't get this last time, but let me get it now. It'll help further expand on this chapter and what I'm bringing out. Let me go to the book of Daniel, y'all. Let's go to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2 and is it chapter 2? Hold on, let me find it, y'all. Yeah, that's it. So let's go to Daniel chapter 2 and start at verse 20. It says, Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the time and the seasons. He removeth kings and set it up kings." So this part I want to get to. The Most High does. He puts a king in place. If the king get the tripping, he don't like the king, he removes him. So he says, "He removed kings and set it up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know it understanding." But the part I wanted to get to is that the Most High sets kings up, and he also removes kings. So going back to Revelation chapter 20, so Revelation chapter 20 and verse 1, "And I saw an angel coming down from heaven having the keys," and this angel once again is Yahweh Shai, or Jesus Christ, "having keys of the bottomless pit. And he gave these keys to Septimius Severus," y'all, because we just read in Daniel that the Most High, he sets kings up, he removes kings also. So he set this king up once again, Septimius Severus, which came into power around 193 A.D. This time period is also known as the Byzantine era, which means contrary or backwards, because you had black people in power instead of so-called white people. But this is, in fact, talking about him, Septimius Severus. They'll say you have him listed as an African, y'all, but he was actually an Israelite who was born in a Roman province that was in Africa. Okay? And once again, this happened around 193 A.D., the Holy Roman Empire under Constantine, the capital being Constantinople, which is Istanbul, Turkey. But modern day, it is Ankara. You can look this up, y'all. That's the capital of Turkey. So let's go on. It says the bottomless pit, and I brought this out in the last class. That bottomless pit is actually talking about Eurasia, all right, and the Caucasus Mountains, which is where the so-called white man originated from. It's why he calls himself a Caucasian. Whether it's Spanish Caucasian, German Caucasian, et cetera, so on and so forth. All right. Let's go to verse 2. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. And I broke all of this down, y'all, last class. So from Revelations chapter 20 and verse 2, you can put Revelations chapter 12. Verse 3 and verse 9. Then you can get Genesis chapter 3, verse 1. Then Revelation chapter 13, verse 1 and verse 18. And that equals Genesis chapter 25, verse 25, which equals Genesis 36, verses 8 and 9. All right. Then Revelation chapter 20 and verse 3 reads, and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled. And after that, he must be loosed a little season. Now, the reason Septimius Severus is so important and the Byzantine Empire is so important in this chapter is because their reign was for about 1,000 years, 1,000-year time period, in which time period the so-called white man, the Caucasians, the Edomites, were in the caves of Europe, of Eurasia, as the cavemen. That's why you see that evolution time chart that they have about them, you know, being all hunched over and then eventually standing up as a man on this on 2 feet and standing up straight, but they left out the other half, which showed him before he ran into those caves, he was upright, walking straight up as a man. And that's what I wanted to get to. So let's go from there just to prove that he was, in fact, once upon a time, standing up on all, on 2 feet as a man. Come on, man. Get this crap out the way. There we go. All right, so let's go to Job, y'all. Let's go to Job chapter 30. Let me start at verse 5. Job chapter 30 and verse 5, and it reads, they were driven forth from among men. They cried after them as after a thief. So when it says that they was driven forth from among men, the so-called white man, the Edomites, they were driven into those caves. So they used to, once upon a time, they were walk standing straight up like a man. And they'll try to tell you and use that evolution chart to show you that all men came from that. No, all men did not come from that. The Most High made, like the scripture says, he made man upright from the beginning. But there was a man that was not, that he was made upright, but he was chased into those caves. And he was forced to, he was forced to live in those caves for a 1,000-year time period. And you can do the math on it too, y'all. So from 193 A.D. to around 1453 is roughly about 1,000 years. All right? You can do the math on that. What's so important about that, around the late 14, early 1500s, was what is known as the Renaissance time period. The word Renaissance means rebirth. What was being rebirthed was the so-called white man, his power structure. This is why if you did, you went to high school and you had world history, I know y'all touched on the Renaissance era and you would see all these paintings, right? All these paintings of these Edomites that look like hippies with long hair, and all the angels were projected as white people. Even the depiction of Christ, which came from Caesar Borgia, Pope Alexander VI's son of Rome, he posed for the portrait, the fake image of Christ, came out during that time period. The Last Supper, the 16th chapel, all of these things were coming out around the Renaissance. They were training themselves as the people of the Bible, as the architects, the artists, the philosophers. All of this was coming out during that time period because it was their time to shine, their time to reign. Okay, but we read in Job chapter 30 and verse 5, it says, they were driven forth from among men. They cried after them as after thieves, to dwell in the cliffs of the valleys and caves of the earth and in the rocks. Who else could this be talking about but the so-called white man? This is that 1,000-year time period that's talked about in the book of Revelation, y'all. Now, I want to go back because I was reading this last time. I want to go back to one of the sources I was using, which talks about the Khazars. And I'm going to have to read a lot of this, y'all, to get us to see it. Matter of fact, y'all, let me see. Excuse me for a second, y'all. All right, y'all. Sorry about that. I'm back. Okay, so this is from Britannica, EncyclopediaBritannica.com, and I read quite a bit of this. So let me just get back into it. This is Khazar, member of a confederate or Turkish-speaking tribe that in the late 6th century CE established a major commercial empire covering the southeast. Hold on, y'all. Oh, my goodness. Why is he coming this early? Told me 12 o'clock. I'm sorry, I got repairmen coming on to fix the sink. Okay, let me get into this. Let me finish. Oh, the water archive. I didn't know that. It says Kamala's daddy is Jamaican, so he's a Benjamite. So she is Israelite. So I was right. He sent the nigga to do his dirty work. Anyway, let me go on with this. It says Khazar, member of a Confederate or Turkish speaking tribe that in the late 6th century, CE established a major commercial empire covering the southeast section of modern European Russia. Although the origin of the term Khazar and the early history of the Khazar people are obscure, it is fairly certain that the Khazars were originally located in the northern Caucasus region and were part of the Western Turkish Empire and Turkestan. The Khazars were in contact with the Persians in the mid-6th century CE, and they added the Byzantine Empire, Heraclius, in the campaign against the Persians. Now, this is the reason I'm reading about the Khazars, y'all, because I'm showing proof that the Khazars are the original Caucasians. Now, it says, by the beginning of the 7th century, the Khazars have become independent of the Turkish Empire to the east, but by the middle of the century, the expanding empire of the Arabs had penetrated as far northward as the northern Caucasus. And let me jump down. It says, during the same time period, however, they expanded westward. By the second half of the 8th century, their empire had reached the peak of its own power in extending along the northern shores of the Black Sea from the lower Vulgate and the Caspian Sea in the east to the Dnieper River in the west. The Khazars controlled and exacted tribute from the Alani and other northern Caucasian peoples dwelling between the mountains and the Kaban River, from the Mayas, Hungarians habitating the area around the Donis River, from the Goths, and from the Greeks' colonies on the Crimean Peninsula, the Volga Bulgarians, and numerous Slavic tribes also recognized the Khazars as their overlords. Y'all see that, right? Now it says, although basically Turkish, the Khazars, state bore little resemblance to the other Turkish empires of Central Euro-Asia. And remember, the Ottoman Turks came in and they overtook Istanbul, Turkey, which used to be the capital of the Holy Roman Empire. But the Ottoman Turks, they were so-called white people. They were Caucasians. That's why it's talking about the Khazars and their Turkish empire in Central Euro-Asia. Now listen to this. It says it was headed by a saluted supreme ruler of semi-religious character called a Khagan, who wielded little real power, and by tribute chieftains, each known as a beg. The state's military organization also seems to have lacked the forcefulness of those of the greater Turkish Mongol empires. The Khazars seem to have been more inclined to a sedition way of, a sedentary way of life, building towns and fortresses, tilling the soil and planting gardens and vineyards. Trade and the collection of tribute were major sources of income, but the most striking characteristic of the Khazars was, now listen to this, but the most striking characteristic of the Khazars was the apparent adoption of Judaism by the Khagaran and the greater part of the ruling class in about 740. So the Khazars adopted Judaism, right? I hope everybody's listening and understanding this. They adopted. So in other words, they converted to Judaism. It says by the Khagan and the greater part of the ruling class in about 740. The circumstances of the conversion remain obscure. The depth of their adoption of Judaism difficult to assess, but the fact itself is undisputed and unparalleled in Central Euro-Asian history, meaning that you can't dispute it. These are facts converted. These Khazars converted to what they came up to term with Judaism, which is actually what? And I'm going to get into it. It's actually being an Israelite. They were converts, y'all. A few scholars have even asserted that the Judaized Khazars were the remote ancestors of many Eastern European and Russian Jews. It didn't say nothing about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It says that they were the ancestors of Eastern European and Russian Jews. Whatever the case may be, religious tolerance was practiced in the Khazar Empire, and paganism continued to flourish among the population. I hope everybody is getting it. Everybody's understanding this. Now, let me get this out of the 13th tribe. So, I introduced this book in the previous class, probably the one before that. So, Arthur Koestler was a fake Jew who wrote this book entitled The 13th Tribe. All right? And I'm going to read the back of this, right? It says, this book traces the history of the ancient Khazar Empire. So still talking about the same people that I just read from the Encyclopedia Britannica, right? These are two different sources saying the same thing. A major but almost forgotten power in Eastern Europe, which in the Dark Ages, or the Byzantine time period, also known as the Dark Ages, became converted to Judaism. Khazaria was finally wiped out by the forces of Genghis Khan, but evidence indicates that the Khazars themselves migrated to Poland and formed the cradle of Western Jewry, which we just read in the other article talk about how they was all throughout Europe and in Russia. I want to jump to page 15 of the same book, y'all. And I want to read this. And it reads, it says, our investigation cannot go into problems pertaining to the history of ideas, but we must call the reader's attention to the matter of the Khazar kingdom religion. It was the Jewish faith which became the official religion of the ruling Tsar of society. Needless to say, the acceptance of the Jewish faith as the state religion of an ethnically non-Jewish people could be the subject of interesting speculation. We shall, however, confine ourselves to the remark that this official conversion, in defiance of Christian proselytizing by Byzantine, the Muslim influence from the East, and in spite of the political pressure of these two powers to a religion which had no support from any political power, but was persecuted by nearly all, has come as a surprise to all historians concerned with the Khazars, cannot be considered as accidental, but must be regarded as a sign of the independent policy pressured by that kingdom. And what he goes into further in this book, because I ain't going to read the whole thing, just certain little segments of the book, but he talks about how the Khazars were basically in between the war between the Christians and the Muslims who were fighting over Palestine. And they didn't want to join either one. So they had to come up with a respectable religion or a respectable doctrine that the world would respect. So what better respectable doctrine than the doctrine that the Israelites had, which they commonly call Judaism, which is the laws, statutes, and commandments of the Most High. And we'll read on in this book. It says, which leaves us only slightly more bewildered than before. Yet, whereas the sources differ in minor details, the major facts are beyond dispute. He said, you can't even dispute this, that they're converts. So they're not the actual people of the Bible, which he's going to talk about in a later segment of this book. He says, what is in dispute in the fate of the Jewish Khazars after the destruction of their empire in the 12th and 13th century? On this problem, the sources are scant, but various late medieval Khazar settlements are mentioned in the Crimea, in the Ukraine, in Hungary, Poland, Lithuania. The general picture that emerges from these fragmentary pieces of information is that of a migration of Khazar tribes and communities into those regions of Eastern Europe, mainly Russia and Poland, where at the dawn of the modern age, the greatest concentration of Jews were found. This has led several historians to conjecture that a substantial part and perhaps the majority of Eastern Jews, and hence of world Jewry, might be of Khazar and not of Semitic origin. So what they're saying is that these people didn't come from the lineage. When they say Semitic, they're talking about Shemitic. They're talking about Shem, right? Out of Adam's lineage. Adam's lineage going all the way down to Noah, and then Noah had three sons, right? Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So they're saying that these people have no lineage to Shem. They're wrong in that, and I'm going to explain this later on in the class. Matter of fact, let me just get to it now, man. They did come from Shem. They did. But their forefather is Abraham, Isaac, and Esau, not Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay, y'all? We got to understand that. The so-called white man is, in fact, our relative by blood. He's a Hebrew by blood, but he's not an Israelite. And there's definitely a difference because the law, statutes, and commandments wasn't given to them. Let me just prove that. So let me get Psalm chapter 147. Psalm chapter 147. In verse 19, and it reads, he shewed his word unto Jacob, his statutes and his judgments unto Israel. So it says that the Most High showed his word and his statutes, his laws, his judgments, the penalty for breaking his laws. He only showed that to Israel. He had not dealt so with any nation. So he didn't deal the same as he dealt with the Israelites with the other nations. And as for his judgments, they have not known them. Praise ye the Lord. So just to prove what I was saying, the so-called white man is in fact a Hebrew, but he's not an Israelite. Okay? He's a Hebrew because his forefather, Abram, and remember in Genesis they call him Abram the Hebrew taught Hebrew. He taught him the language. So, yeah, they were taught the language. As far as knowing the Most High, the law, statutes, and commandments, it was never given to them, y'all. So they're not God's chosen people, contrary to popular belief. All right. Back to the 13th tribe. I'm on page 16, and I'm reading down at the bottom. Let me see if I wanted to get this part. Yeah, I did want to get this part. It says, how important in quantitative terms is that presence of the Caucasian? And I didn't want to read that part. Which part I wanted to get? No, I got to get this. It says, how important in quantitative terms is that presence of the Caucasian sons of Japheth in the terms of Shem? They're wrong about that. One of the most radical preponderance of the hypothesis concerning the Khazar origins of Jewry is the professor of medieval Jewish history at Tel Aviv University, A.N. Pollock. His book, Khazarian, in Hebrew. Matter of fact, I think this is the book that Sapar got, was published in 1944 in Tel Aviv, and a second edition in 1951. In his introduction, he writes that the facts demand a new approach both to the problem of the relations between the Khazar Jewry and other Jewish communities and to the question of how far we can go in regarding this Khazar Jewry as the nucleus of the large Jewish settlement in Eastern Europe. The descendants of this settlement, those who stayed were there where they were, those who might immigrated to the United States and to other countries, and those who went to Israel, constitute now the large majority of world Jewry. This was written before the full extent of the Holocaust was known, but that does not alter the fact that the large majority of surviving Jews in the world is of Eastern European and thus perhaps mainly of Khazar origin. Y'all hear that? If so, this would mean that their ancestors came not from the Jordan, but from the Volga, not from Canaan, but from the Caucasus, once believed to be the cradle of the Aryan race, and that genealogically, they are more closely related to the Hun, talking about Attila the Hun, Ugro and Maya tribes than to the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Should this turn out to be the case, then the term anti-Semitic would be void of meaning based on a misapprehension shared by both the killers and their victims. The story of the Khazar Empire, as it slowly emerges from the past, begins to look like the most cruel hoax which history has ever perpetrated, y'all. He says a cruel hoax because it truly is. They stole a people's whole identity. Now let me go. I want to go right here. So I'm going back to this chart, y'all. The history of Israel Palestine before 1948, and I want to pick up, and I'm gonna have to read some of this, y'all, so just bear with me. So it starts in 1517. Now I got this date last class, and I showed y'all from 183 AD all the way up to 1453 or the late 1500s, which will give us 1517. I'm sorry, the early 1500s, would give us roughly about 1,000 years, like it says in Revelation chapter 20. So you can't dispute that. And this is why these dates are so important. So in 1517, the Ottoman rule in Palestine begins. So the Ottoman Turks. Palestine was part of the Ottoman Empire through 1917. Now, 1917 is when World War One began, y'all. Now, keep that in mind. I'm just read down this timeline. I'm going to jump around a little bit. 1816, Mishkanof Sha'ani founded. It's the first Jewish settlement outside Jerusalem, Old City. 1878, Petah Tava, founded by religious Orthodox Jews known as Old Yisya, as a Jewish agricultural settlement, it would turn into a Zionist settlement by 1882. So there were already fake Jews or Khazars, Edomites, Caucasians migrating to Israel before 1948. I want us to understand this. 1881, pogroms organized massacre of Jews swept through the Russian Empire through 1884. This included the Kaivat pogrom, considered the worst in this wave. Authorities made no attempts to stop the stop the violence against Jews that lasted months. The flow of Jews to the cities in the Russian Empire turned into a flood. Jews began to leave the pale of the settlement and move to Odessa. Many of those Jews then continued to New York. So they had this massacre in 1881 over in Russia, and a lot of those Khazars, they fled Russia, and some moved to Odessa, Texas. Then it says some ended up in New York. So that's how you get, like, all the Jews, the fake Jews that are here in Texas and New York. Okay, it says Elber Ben Yehuda, the father of modern Hebrew, moves to Palestine and starts efforts to revive the Hebrew language. So this Eleazar is what it's supposed to be, but they call it Eliezer Ben Yehuda. Ben means son of. It's supposed to be bond. Yehuda means supposedly Judah, which means praise of the Most High, or Most High praise. So he's really saying that he gives his name. He says Ben Yehuda or Bon Yehuda, meaning he's a son of Judah, but he ain't the damn son of Judah because they don't come from the 12 tribes. But this dude is famous for what they call modern Hebrew. He's the one that supposedly revived the Hebrew language. Now, remember, they had learned this language. I mean, I should have got that book from Sapar, too. They had learned this language from our people that were escaping persecution during the Byzantine Empire, and they were going to the Khazar Empire for refuge. They were refugees, but they taught, our people taught Khazars the Hebrew language. All right, going on in the time chart, 1882, Rosh Pina founded by 30 families who migrated from Romania. Barton Edmund de Rothschild of Paris agrees to donate a series of subsidies to the settlement. They wouldn't have survived without him. So the Rothschilds, y'all, they were Jews, fake Jews. They were Khazars. 1887. Navi Tzedak, founded by Jewish family who wanted to move out of Jaffa. It's the first Jewish neighborhood built outside of Jaffa, and it would eventually become incorporated into Tel Aviv. 1890, the term Zionist is coined. 1894, Captain Alfred Dreyfus, a Jewish French army captain, was accused of espionage. All right, 1896, the Jewish state, largely shaped by his experience at the Defarge trials. Okay, let me just keep reading. 1897, First Zionist Congress meets. 1901, Jewish National Fund established by the Fifth Zionist Congression. 1903, what happened is Kirchner's progress takes place in the Russian Empire. It's a huge anti-Jewish revolt where 49 Jews were killed. The Uganda proposal, where Helms suggested securing land in British Poles at the Sixth Zionist Congress. I don't know if a lot of us understand that this was during the time where the British were colonizing everywhere, not just Africa. They had colonies also in India, colonies also in China. They were just colonizing, man. And this is during that time period that they also ended up with possession of the land Israel, our land, our homeland. It says, in proposal at the Sixth Zionist Colony, it suggested as a temporary refuge for the Jews, not impacting the ultimate aim of the Zionists, a Jewish state in the land of Israel. So that they were aiming and going to Israel, but they tried to make it seem like they wanted to go to Uganda. Let me see, 1904, around 40,000 Jews flee the Russian Empire, all right? They bring socialist values, and in this period, Hebrew starts to revive as a spoken language. So that language he was working on, the modern Hebrew, they started speaking it heavily in 1904. 1909, Tel Aviv, founded near Jaffa by a group of Jewish families. 1910, first modern Hebrew dictionary published. Now, if they claim to be God's chosen people, then why would they have to modernize the chosen language that was given and then have a dictionary published in 1910, which lets you know that they're not speaking the ancient Hebrew? Because it would have been recorded centuries before 1910. 1915, it says, Makan Hussan, a series of 10 letters between Sir Henry Makan, the British High Commissioner to Egypt. That ain't really important. Let me just jump down. 1916, a secret agreement during World War One between the United Kingdom and France to divide the Middle East after the war ended. So the United Kingdom is basically talking about Britain. So Britain, France wanted to divide the Middle East up after the war ended. Arab revolt begins against the Ottoman Empire, initiated by al-Hasami, with the aim of ending Ottoman rule in Arab-speaking areas supported by Britain. So the British, in cahoots with the Arabs, were trying to overthrow the Ottoman Turks at this time period, y'all. Jewish Legion, this is 1917, is the date I wanted to get to, 1917. Jewish Legion formed as part of the British Army refers to five battalions of Jewish volunteers who fought against the Ottoman Empire during World War One. This date is significant because this was the end of the Ottoman Turk Empire, y'all, around World War One. Now, I'm going to skip down. Now, I'm still in the year 1917, and this is November 2nd. The Balfour Declaration, a 117-word letter from the British Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs, Arthur Balfour, to Walter Rothschild, a prominent British Jew, member of the Rothschild family. In the text, Britain recognizes the right of Jews to a home in Palestine, the term national home was purposely vague and did not necessarily mean a state. And this is the copy of the letter, y'all. It says Foreign Office, November 2nd, 1917. Dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you on behalf of His Majesty government the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet, His Majesty government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. You see this? This is what they was orchestrating the whole time. And will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, and being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudge the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to knowledge of the Zionist Federation. So that happened in 1917, y'all. Now, I'm going to jump down a little bit. I'm still reading this time chart. This is important, y'all. I know it might seem boring. I'm hoping I'm not losing anybody, but I'm coming to a point to get everybody to understand how Judaism became a religion and how the Khazars ended up in the land of Israel. So I'm going to go all the way to 19. Let me get there. This was a real interesting fact right here. Let me see. So listen, y'all. In 1939, World War II starts, all right? 39. Now, this is 1941. Al-Hassani travels to Berlin, where he meets Hitler and other top Nazi leaders. Agus Powers expressed their support for the illegitimate, I'm sorry, Axis Powers expressed their support for the elimination of the Jewish national homeland in Palestine. So this is Hitler meeting with this Arab cat, and they're discussing how they want to eliminate the national proposed homeland of those Jewish people or those Khazars. It says he helps recruit Bosnian Muslims as Nazi troops. Wow, that's a fact I bet y'all didn't know. There were Arabs that were in the Nazi army, y'all. There were Muslims that participated in the Nazi army. Baltimore Conference in New York. Now I'm going to skip down. I'm pressed for time. So here we go, 1948. Now, keep in mind, y'all, World War II ended in 1945. All right? And after you have the end of the war, the World War II in 1945, then you have this quest for world dominance, which would eventually spiral into what's known as the Cold War between Russia and the United States. Now, Russia was solely where they were against the state of Israel being placed there in the land of Israel, the home of the fake Jews. They were against it because they understood that they would have America in their backyard with them nuclear weapons, so they didn't want it there. But America understood that that was a very strategic position to have in the Middle East in case they did go into a world war with Russia. So 1948, and it happened in, let me get to it, 1948 in March. Palestine is established as a Jewish state. All right, it was established. The land was not rightfully theirs. They were given land that wasn't theirs, and this is why the fighting continues even to this day. Here recently we read in the news about how the Palestinians and the Jewish people were fighting each other. And the reason they've been fighting each other, because the Arabs say that those people have no right to that land. They saying it ain't their land. Rightly so, it's not their land. But the Arabs is trying to say that it's their land. Well, it's not their land either. Now, let me read you this. I'm going back to the 13th tribe, y'all. And this is in the appendix. Now, listen to this. It says, while this book deals with past history, it unavoidably carries certain implications for the present and future. The first place, I am aware of the danger that it may be maliciously misinterpreted as the denial of the state of Israel's right to exist. So what he's saying is he understands that his book might be misinterpreted as him saying that the state of Israel has no right to exist. But of course he's going to take that for his people. He says, but that right is not based on the hypothetical origins of the Jewish people. But he's saying that the fact that these Jewish people want to call themselves the true Jews has nothing to do with them getting land. That's far from the contrary, though. It says, nor on the mythological covenant of Abraham with God. So he's trying to say that the covenant that the Most High made with Abraham didn't exist. It's a myth. It is based on international law. So he's saying the Jewish state is based on international law, which it is, i.e., on the United Nations decision in 1947 to participate in Palestine, once a Turkish province, then a British mandate territory, into an Arab and a Jewish state. Whatever the Israeli citizens' racial origin or whatever illusion they entertain about them, their state exists de jure and de facto and cannot be undone except by genocide. Without entering into controversial issues, one may add, as a matter of historical fact, that the partition of the Palestine was the result of a century of peaceful Jewish immigration and pioneer efforts, which provided the ethical justification for the state's legal existence. Whether the chromosome of its people contained genes of Khazar or Semitic, Roman or Spanish origins is irrelevant and cannot affect Israelis' right to exist, nor the moral obligation of any civilized person, Gentile or Jew, to defend that right. Even the geographic origin of the native Israeli parents or grandparents tend to be forgotten in the bubbling racial melting pot. The problem of the Khazar infusion, and listen to this, 1,000 years ago, however fascinating, is irrelevant to modern Israel. So he's saying all that take up for the Jewish state, what I wanted to get to. And this is the index, 13 tribe, page 224. The Jews who inhabited, regardless of their checkered origins, possess the essential requirements of a nation, a country of their own, a common language, government, and army. The Jews of the diaspora have none of these requirements of nationhood. Now, the Jews of the diaspora would be actually us. Now, remember what the Most High had told us, and I'm going to go to Deuteronomy chapter 28 just to get it. So Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 64, and the Lord shall scatter thee among all people from the one end of the earth even unto the other, and there thou shalt serve other gods, which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, even wood and stone. So that's the original diaspora. This is what he's talking about. The Jews of the diaspora have none of these requirements of nationhood, meaning that they don't have their own land, they don't have their own government, their own army, so on and so forth. What sets them apart as a special category from the Gentiles amidst whom they live is their declared religion, whether they practice it or not. Here lies the basic difference between Israelis and Jews of the diaspora. You see this? He's making the difference between the Israelis and the Jews of the diaspora. Now listen, the former, meaning the Jews of the diaspora, have acquired a national identity. A national identity is a nation identity. The latter, meaning the Jews of the diaspora, are labeled as Jews only by their religion, not by their nationality, not by their race. I'm sorry, he ain't talking about the ones of the diaspora. He's talking about the fake Jews. He says the former have acquired a national identity. The latter are labeled as Jews only by their religion, not by their nationality nor by their race. This, however, creates a tragic paradox because the Jewish religion, unlike Christianity, Buddhism or Islam, implies membership of a historical nation, a chosen race. See that? All Jewish festivals commemorate events in national history. Listen to this. The Exodus from Egypt applies to who? The Israelites of the Bible, the Khazars, who migrated from Europe, Eastern Europe, to modern-day Israel. It says the Exodus from Egypt, right? And what festival is that? We know it as Passover. The Maccabean Revolt, we know it as what? Hanukkah, or the Feast of Dedication. It says the death of the oppressor, Haman. You find that in the book of Esther. We know it as what? Purim. The destruction of the temple. And we know that our temple has been destroyed many times. The Old Testament is first and foremost the narrative of a nation's history. Y'all hear that? I'm going to read it again. The Old Testament is first and foremost, the narrative or story of a nation's history. It gave monotheism to the world, yet its credo is tribal rather than universal. What this dude knew is that the Bible is, in fact, a story about a people's national heritage, about their plight, about their God, about their power. He said it's not universal, man. This dude knew that. The world don't know that. The world want to keep thinking that the Bible is a book about religion, and it's not. Now, I want to go here to the Bible now, Jeremiah chapter 16, verse 19. Because you might ask, well, what happened? Why did those people take our place? So Jeremiah chapter 16 and verse 19. And it reads, O Lord, my strength and my fortress and my refuge in the day of affliction, the Gentiles shall come unto thee from the ends of the earth and shall say, surely our fathers have inherited lies. vanities and things wherein there is no profit, man. And this is what they basically did, y'all. They handed down these lies from decade to decade, from century to century, that they are God's chosen people, when in fact, they ain't God's chosen people, man. They are converts. Now I'm going to get Psalm chapter 83. And I know we read this all the time, y'all, but I want to show y'all something. So we're going to Psalm chapter 83. Why is this thing doing this? So we're going to Psalm chapter 83, and I'm going to start at verse 1. Keep not silent, keep not thou silent, O God. Hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, thy enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. So the crafty counsel was that's been conspiring against our people since way back, and they still doing it. But they're conspiring for this purpose. Verse 4, they have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation. So that's the first objective. They want to stop us from being a nation, being a people. It says that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. So they won't even remember who are the real Israelites. Now listen to this. Verse 5, for they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee. Confederate means they've come together, all for the same purpose. Verse 6, it says the tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites. So let me back up a little bit. It says, he's at 12 o'clock. Tell him we're not ready. I'm sorry, y'all. The tabernacles of Edom. Now, Edom, and I went over this in previous classes, y'all. Edom is talking about definitely the so-called white man. And you have a lot of brothers out here now saying that the Edomites are the so-called Arabs. Yes, y'all, they're right, but they're only right in their ignorance. Because what they don't understand is that the Edomites were in that region, and we just got it, how the Brits colonialized that whole region, y'all. Y'all heard of like some old Humphrey Bogart movies, Lawrence in Arabia, and they would show these Edomites, these so-called white people in these Arab countries. They would wonder, what the hell are they doing over there? But they've always had ties with them, and they intermingle with them. In fact, you can do a little research, and you'll find out that the Bushes and the Bin Laden family were close friends for many, many years, and I believe they were relatives. But in the scripture even tell you how Esau had mingled his seed with the nations. So like I said, the brothers are right, but they're only right in their ignorance of the things they don't know. Because the Edomites have colonialized the whole globe. In verse 6, in Psalm chapter 82 and verse 6, when it says the tabernacles of Edom, it's talking about the so-called white man. Then it says, and the Ishmaelites. Now, why would it name them two in particular so neck and neck, so close? Because they've been in cahoots. They've been conspiring. And remember, it was the Ishmaelites, which is talking about the Arabs, y'all, who actually sold us into slavery. But to who? The so-called white man. You read about this way back in Genesis when you read about Joseph being sold to the Midianites. And the Midianites are Arabs. Then it tells you in that same chapter, the Ishmaelites, the same people, one and the same. It says, of Moab, which is the so-called Chinese. Then it says, and the Hagarenes, which are more Arab people. The Jebus, Arabs, and Ammon, these are the Japanese people. It says, and Amalek. the Amalekites, that's who it's talking about, Amalek or the Amalekites, which came from whose lineage? From Esau's lineage. You can read that in Genesis, the 36th chapter. So all these nations had conspired against us. Reading on, and it says, the Philistines with the inhabitants of Tyre. Now, the Philistines, or what they call modern day, the Palestinians, or the Palestinians, same people. Ashur also was joined with them. They have hoping the children of Lot, Salah. So these are all the nations that had conspired against us. But the Bible had prophesied this. Now let's get Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43. Deuteronomy chapter 28 verse 43. And it reads, the stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. So the strangers, all the nations that it mentioned, who is in our communities? You got the Arabs at the corner store, right? You got the so-called Chinese selling their rice in the rice houses, or the Chinamen, is that what we call them, in St. Louis, East St. Louis. And then you got them with owning all the beauty salons, them and the East Indians. They're in cahoots because they sell them the fake hair, the tracks, the weave. The sisters be running up in these damn beauty supplies buying. But the Most High told us this was going to happen. This is what we read in Deuteronomy chapter 28, part of the curses. The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high, and thou shalt come down very low. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. Because you see, man, these people that take advantage of us, especially the so-called Edomites. Back in the day, and y'all can look this up, like in the 20s and the 30s, 1920s and 30s, you would have these U.S. people move into the black communities and open up these appliance stores, these furniture stores, and they would let us get stuff on credit, right, and charge us these high interest rates. So by the time you get through paying for whatever you purchase from them, you didn't pay for it three times over, man. But the Most High told us this. This was prophesied. But once again, this is part of our punishment. He says, he shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail. And this is the same predicament that we still in right now, man. We ain't running nothing. We don't own nothing. We don't possess nothing. We can't make no laws to govern ourselves because we're in the hands of our captors right now. But once again, this is our punishment. But the Most High set it up this way, y'all. Now let's get Revelations chapter 2 and verse 9. So you ask why we're in the condition that we're in and why these people have claimed our inheritance. And remember what the scripture said. Did I get that scripture? I ain't got time to get it. But the Most High said that we were going to be discontinued from our heritage, y'all. And this is what he was talking about. Revelation chapter 2 and verse 9. And this is Christ speaking. He said, I know thy works and tribulation and poverty, but thou art rich. And I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. The word synagogue means house. The word Satan means adversary. So how will I see this? Christ sees that these people are impersonating us. He said, I know the blasphemy, the filthy, wicked lie, these people, they saying that they us. And you might say, well, it ain't no big deal, you know, if they want to call themselves these people and they really not. Hell, it ain't. It's just like somebody coming up in your house saying that they you. And they live in your house and they get to sleep with your wife and raise your children. There's something wrong with that? You damn right it is. So everything's wrong with
a people stealing another's people, another people's national identity and another people's inheritance. Yes, they are wrong. They are culprits. But we deserved it, y'all. This is why the Most High put us in this condition, because of our idolatry and our hatred for one another. This is why we're going through it. And this is why the Most High has them in our homeland still to this day and age, because we still ain't got our stuff together, y'all. So, y'all, that's going to conclude Blog Talk for today, and it also concludes the segment that I was doing on religion. I know it's been a long series, y'all. Thank y'all for bearing with me and going through the series with me. I hope it was clear. I hope everybody got some understanding out of it. I hope it wasn't too jumbled. I know I was jumping around through various sources just trying to give some history on what I was bringing out, man. But I hope everybody got some understanding out of the class. I want to thank Mashaba for hooking up the broadcast. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and everybody for supporting here at Blog Talk. Once again, I'm your brother, Tazapa. Signing off, y'all. I want to say shalom.